On this episode of Made for This, I sit down for a conversation with Karen Street, entrepreneur, relentlessly creative, and mom of three. And hey, I get to be her husband. Let's do this.
I just deal with quilters, and they know how much they've put into their quilts, how much time and money they put into making the quilt top, and how much they've spent on batting and backing. So they come to me and they will pay me to quilt it. And when I talk to other people, non-quilters about it, they don't understand. Wait. So people are paying you to do that?
Yeah.
And yeah, they really are.
Is there a right time to invest and start the business you've been dreaming about? Can you be an entrepreneur and raise kids at the same time and do both well? And how do you break into a market with a very different demographic than you're used to? Welcome to the Made for This podcast. I'm Alex Street, your remote mentor, helping you discover and do what you're made for. This podcast is here to help make you more confident in who you are and what you bring to the world. I want to bring you value by introducing you to more amazing mentors through conversational style interviews. As we dive into their work and stories, I know you will learn from their experiences, be inspired to action, and begin to tell a better story with your life. Today on the podcast, I'm joined by Karen Street. She has been making beautiful things since she was a kid and has now figured out how to turn her passion into a growing business. Karen is the owner and founder of Karen Street Long Arm Quilting and wants to see this niche business thrive. Karen is unique in her position as a guest on this show. Now, she's not the only family member I've had on the show, though she is the only guest I actually get to be married to. But she is the only guest, in fact, she's the only person I know that is paid to quilt. To me, and maybe to you, quilting is kind of like an old woman's thing to do, but Karen has taken this skill, taught to her by her mom, and is building a successful business within that classic quilter's demographic. And she's doing it all while raising three of my favorite humans on the planet. In our conversation today, Karen not only brings us into a wholly relatable story of learning a craft and craftiness as a child, then wanting to do something with those skills as an adult, but she helps us understand the niche world of quilting, what it is exactly that she does to make money, and how she built her business as a stay-at-home mom. God, I love this woman. If you are feeling like there aren't enough hours in the day to get started, or you're struggling with patience and want your idea to be successful right now, or you're looking for the permission to turn your childhood passion into a business, Karen is here to help inspire you to action. Now let's get into it. Here's my conversation with Karen Street. It's interesting getting into your story, and I'm going to ask you your story. Usually the people that I have on the show, I don't actually know much of their story, but you, I know a lot about your story.
Good. Yeah.
Yeah. So some of this will be me just straight up curiosity. Maybe I'll ask you things on this episode that I've never asked you before.
Oh.
Yeah.
Makes me nervous.
Yeah, makes me nervous too. But maybe also I'll just be asking you things that obviously I know, but it'll be good to get your story out. So can you tell me what do you think is one of the most amazing things that has been made for you and given to you?
Made for you? Me. It's a good question. Well, I guess one of the most amazing things is probably the bed quilt we sleep under every night.
Yeah.
Which my mom made. She started for, my high school graduation, and then eventually finished and gave it to us for our wedding. And it's beautiful. And if podcasts had pictures, then you would be able to see it. And it's great.
Yeah, we can Instagram that, though, and we can throw that up on the thing. It really is beautiful. It's this whole, like, I don't know, would you say that's rainbow? I don't know what it
is. Well, I guess. Yeah, color gradient, rainbowish. It's not really a rainbow. I don't know. It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's not like you would have in a child's bedroom rainbow, but it definitely goes from red to other colors.
Yeah, it's rainbow-esque.
You know, sometimes when I'm interviewing people, my mind is really sharp and I can think of anything. And at this point, the only color I can think of in the rainbow is red. So
it also goes to black, and there's no black in the rainbow. So
Yeah. All right. So let's get into this. What do you do? Why did I just ask you about making things? And why is a quilt the most amazing thing that you've ever received. Why do you care about that? Because I don't know that other people would say that that's the best thing that they've received or that they care. So what's the main work that you're bringing into the world?
First of all, that's interesting because I never would have considered something, I guess, other than a quilt. Maybe I'm sure I've gotten other really amazing things, but because we're talking about quilting, a quilt was the first thing that came to my mind.
Yeah.
I am a long arm quilter, which means that I take a customer's quilt top and backing, load it onto my 12-foot long machine, which takes up a whole room in the house, and I load the backing, then batting, and then quilt top, and then sew all three layers together, which is the actual quilting portion. And that's what they pay me for.
Yeah. So there's so many questions that come out of that. So you have a 12-foot long sewing machine?
I do, yes. It's a beast. Her name is Flo.
It's so good. So she's
a beast.
Talk about her anthropomorphically.
Yeah, sometimes.
She's a beast, and so it's called a long arm. This is a long arm quilting machine.
This is a long arm sewing machine. Yeah.
Sewing machine.
Yeah,
because it has a long arm to it. This thing that goes over so that it can have the most amount of fabric between machine and needle as possible.
Yeah. So it can do it can sew a really big area. Whereas on a domestic or regular sewing machine, it's got like a, I don't know if it's 7-10 inches of throat space that you can work within. This one has 24 inches.
So we've got throats and arms.
Yeah. She's got body parts.
And then there's this brain, which is actually this computerized piece to it. Yeah. So you go on, tell me how that works. Bring me in from this, like you said, you bring in a quilt top and a backing and the batting. The batting's that comfy part in the middle. Yes.
Yeah, the puffy part or the warm part.
Great.
Yeah.
I thought comfy was like slang, but no, you've got puffy and warm. That's great.
Yeah.
For the middle part, and that's what actually makes it comfortable. So you bring it in. So somebody comes to the door.
Yes. Someone brings me a quilt. Comes to the door, they find me through, I don't know, people. Well, I don't know, talk about that later.
Instagram.
Anyways,
people,
Instagram.
Yeah, we'll get into the business portion at the end.
So they bring me a quilt.
Yeah.
Sometimes they just drop it off and say, do whatever you want. And sometimes they come with me to my machine and we look at patterns. So I have hundreds of patterns that they can choose from. And then... So it's more complicated and pretty simple as well. So I choose a pattern. I click on generate edge to edge on the machine, and then it makes the pattern go across the... How do I explain it?
Yeah.
Okay, so I type in the dimensions of the quilt. Then I choose a pattern, how dense or loose I want the pattern to be quilted. So that's... I can make it the pattern bigger or smaller. Click a button that says generate edge to edge, and then I alter the pattern however I need to, if I need to make the rows closer or farther apart. And I tell the computer where the sew zone is, where the actual quilt is, how big it is, and where it's allowed to sew.
Yeah.
Reposition the quilt on the sew zone by letting it know where the needle is, and I press go.
Right. So it's this like relationship between you and Flo. It's like you tell her where to go, but then she's like, I got this.
But then I have to be there to make sure she's doing what she's supposed to do.
Yeah, she's a little...
Because sometimes she acts up.
Temperamental.
Generally, she's very good. She's a good machine.
Yeah.
But sometimes I have to...
3 years old, though. She's a bit of a toddler, right? Yeah, going through that.
A three-nager? Is that a thing?
No, now it is, though.
No, I've heard someone say that before. Really? I didn't make it up.
Oh, like it's a 3-year-old acting like a teenager.
Yeah.
That's good. I like that.
Yeah.
You are also a mom.
Mm-hmm.
You were a mom before you were a quilter?
No.
No,
so
let's get into that.
Before I was a mom.
Yeah, so let's get into that. So how do you get to the point where, as a mom of now a 12-year-old, a 9-year-old, and on this very day, a 7-year-old, you decide at some point, I need to make this thing that I've done for a long time, this quilting thing, into a business and... get into that. So just bring me through the journey a little bit of like how you got into quilting.
Mm-hmm.
And you might be one of the youngest professional quilters.
I'm always the youngest in a room of quilters. Always.
Like by half?
Oh, by a good 20 years. Unless my sister's there, I'm the youngest by at least 20 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So exactly. So you're getting into this world that is totally niche, but it's a niche market mostly for old women, I assume.
Yeah, it is.
So what in the world? How does it get to this point for you to get into that? Just bring me into, like, how did it start? How did it begin?
How did I start quilting?
Yeah.
So there was one Christmas that my mom gave me and my two older sisters. You know them.
Yes.
But the world doesn't.
No.
A beginner quilting class for Christmas. And she gave us all of the sort of basic tools that we would need and a gift certificate to buy fabric. And we all four of us took a beginner quilting class together. And that was about 16 or 18 years ago.
Yeah. And is this something at that point, like you're already into to creating?
I like crafty things. I've always liked crafty things. And my mom's like a jack of all trades. She's tried her hand at everything from cross-stitching, crocheting, woodworking. She did folk art painting for a long time. And as we were growing up, quilting was something that she always wanted to try. But she decided she wanted to get into that when her kids were older. So when we got a little bit older, she got us a quilting class for Christmas. Also, we did a block of the month class at a local quilt store, which is where you pay, I think it was at the time, $10 to start, I think 10, 20, I don't remember. They give you a kit of fabric to make a 12-inch block. The next month at class, I think it was a Saturday thing, so the next last Saturday of the month or whatever it was, you show up with your finished block from the month before and they give you the fabric and instructions for a new block for free. As long as you show up on time with your block done, you get the next kit for free. So we did that for 2 years, and each month we learned a different technique or tip or trick. So it was nice to learn things a little bit at a time. It wasn't a huge undertaking because we were learning just one block at a time.
Right. And you weren't thinking like, oh, I need to learn this because this is going to be the thing that I do for the rest of my life.
It's just a hobby. At that point I was doing a lot of scrapbooking.
Yeah.
Scrapbooking. Wait, no, at that point I may have been, I think I was scrapbooking our wedding at that point.
Yeah.
I had decided after we got engaged, that's when I was going to learn to scrapbook, which was silly because there's so much to scrapbook at that point.
We now have the memory of our wedding, so that's a good thing.
Yeah, technically our wedding scrapbook isn't finished, but it's pretty close. So
and I had the video and I was supposed to do a video scrapbook thing, and that's no. Still waiting 14 years later.
Almost 14 years.
Yeah, that's great.
Maybe this year.
Uh-huh. All right. So you're into scrapbooking, which is already this sort of intricate thing where you're cutting out bits and gluing it on. Quilting's exactly the
same,
isn't it?
Intricate like that.
Yeah. But then you start learning these new techniques about quilting and you're like, I'm into this.
Well, no, it took years to really be into it. I knew I enjoyed it, but the block of the month was sort of a monthly little reminder that, you really like to quilt.
Yeah.
You like to do these other things. Whether I don't remember if I was crocheting at the time or just scrapbooking, but I'm a little bit like my mom where I see something that someone else made. I'm like, I can make that. And I want to go and buy all the materials and tools and things and invest way too much money in this craft that I don't know if I'm really going to want to do
cake
forever.
Decorating for a while?
I did cake decorating when I was on maternity leave with Garrett, our second.
Yeah. I remember that. I'm really thankful for that one. That was good. I've really just benefited from all of your craftiness. That's why I love this. Mostly. It's nice to see you come alive and everything, but really I just get things out of it. So that's...
I see.
The truth comes out. How great. So so then does it just grow? The passion just grows for this? You keep making things?
I don't know where that switch flipped. I was scrapbooking a lot. I think it was probably just at some point something switched, and I was probably after Piper was born because her scrapbook's not finished and the other two have finished scrapbooks.
Right.
And I started quilting more and when I had free time, instead of pulling out scrapbooking stuff, I would go to the sewing room.
Yeah.
I don't know what the switch was.
And then you just start making
making quilts.
More. And I mean, do you start thinking about it? Is this like when you're, you know, when you're when I'm driving, I sometimes find myself thinking about different talks that I'm doing or something like mm-hmm. that, you know, the craft that I have. Mm-hmm. When you're driving, when you're sitting still, like, are you thinking of patterns? Are you thinking of blocks that you're making, current quilts that you're working
sometimes,
on?
Sometimes I'm thinking about where the closest quilt store is, when I can get to a quilt store. Sometimes I'm thinking about fabric or patterns or, at this point, deadlines with quilts.
Which is different than making your own quilt. Like, yeah. That's a different game where you're now into that business. I just need to get that quilt on the machine, get flow going and do that. That's different than creating your own.
Absolutely.
Thing.
Very different.
What is the difference between that?
So creating my own thing, there's a lot more. I'm working on it the very beginning to very end. I love, okay, my two favorite parts of quilting are choosing fabric and like a pattern.
Yeah.
Like the playing with fabric and the very end when I can say, I made that. So, I mean, I enjoy the middle parts, although my sisters will.
The middle parts being 95%.
I know. So my sister always mocks me for saying that I actually hate quilting.
Yeah.
But really, I don't. It's just that depending on the pattern or the project, the middle part can get tedious if there's the same thing over and over and over and over again. That's not as enjoyable.
Right. Which is what a lot of it is, because you're actually just cutting out little triangles.
Well, yeah, but it depends on the quilt. So sometimes there are, it's the same sort of overall pattern in a quilt, and I'm just cutting out the same size strips or blocks for the whole quilt. And sometimes there's different blocks within the quilt, and they're all different. So I'm working on each one individually, and it's more focused on like a little bit at little areas, little projects almost at a time within the quilt.
Right. Like each of those 12-inch blocks or whatever is a project.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you put all of those together and then.
So, yeah, I still do a block of the month. Since 2002, I've done a block of the month every year, except one year when I was working at a scrapbook store and couldn't make it on Saturdays.
Yeah.
So it's really nice to have those just one block. And it's kind of like a quick finish project where it's like it's almost instant gratification because I'm like, oh, look, I did it. But when I'm working on a project that's the same thing beginning to end. I did one this summer and it was sewing strips together for hours. And that's just, it just wasn't as fun for me.
It's
different. I don't know.
Yeah. So like the beginning, the end, there's this, and yet the actual like doing of it is the,
Well, I guess it depends, because within each quilt, if there's different blocks, I can finish a block and say, I did that.
Right.
So there's kind of like little victories throughout the quilt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was that the same with scrapbooking? Is that the same with crocheting? Mm-hmm. Like all the different kind of crafts that you do? Is it?
Yeah. My favorite is finishing something and saying, I made that.
Yeah.
So crocheting, most of the things I would make would be really not super easy projects, but usually pretty quick finishes.
Right.
And scrapbooking, depending on how long I would spend on a page, they don't take that long if you're not agonizing over every little detail. So another sort of could be an hour, a few hours, and go, I did that. Look, I made a beautiful thing.
And so now you're at this, I mean, that's what's so fun about the job that that you're doing and the work that you're doing, because you're doing this thing that's like, yeah, I like quilting. It's great, but you just keep getting to finish people's quilts.
Yes, because funny enough, the quilting part before I got the long arm was probably the most daunting task, and I was always worried about ruining a quilt after spending so much time and money making this quilt top. Unless I had someone to give it to or a specific deadline, quilt tops would sit there unfinished because I was so scared of ruining the quilt. So I would avoid the quilting at all costs.
And again, the quilt, like if you look at a quilt that somebody made, the quilting is the actual like swirly design that the thread has made all the way through it, just, you know, for our listener, obviously I'm an expert, I know this stuff, but
so the quilt top is when someone is sewing just little bits of fabric together, that's called piecing. You're piecing the quilt top.
This is great. I love this expert class. Yes. Okay.
And the quilting is the actual sewing the top middle, and back together.
Right. So that it all sticks together. And again, then you've got this nice comfy blanket.
Yeah. But if you call it a blanket to a quilter, they would be thoroughly offended.
Oh, no.
It's a quilt. Yeah.
I'm just offended. Oh, the entire quilting community. I guess
a quilt is a kind of blanket, but don't call it a blanket. Yeah. I mean, I'm okay with it, but I've heard other people who are, they're not impressed.
Not a blanket.
Yeah, and don't call it an Afghan or any, it's a quilt.
Yeah.
Quilt.
Okay. This is good. I see the fury in your eyes. No, you're great.
You can hear it too, right?
Uh-huh. Absolutely. So, okay. So you're talking about this, you said when Piper was born, so that was 7 years ago, mm-hmm. our youngest. And so she, then something switches. You don't know kind of what or even put a point on it, but you're like, I just started making more quilts. Mm-hmm. And then it just started growing more, and you started making your own more of your own quilts through all of that. Mm-hmm. So something's happening where you're enjoying this more on your own time. But then you get flow. What's the deal? What happened? What switches to say this should be a thing that I do to actually earn money or
right
whatever that is? How do you turn that hobby into some people say a jobby?
I've never heard that one. You're making
if you've never heard that
up.
Before, then yes, I did coin that term. if you have heard that.
A jobby.
Anyways, yeah. How do you turn that from a hobby into work?
I've never had like a career. So when we got married, mm-hmm. I worked for a year at a leather restoration company. Really random.
Yeah.
Didn't love the job.
Nope.
Got pregnant with Bronwyn. And
awesome.
A year and a month after we got married, baby. So I didn't have to work. I mean, it's a different kind of work, but you know. And then I later got a job in the office at the church mm-hmm. that we went to. And I worked there for a while, and then babies. And then I was a stay-at-home mom, and then Piper was ready to go to school. And I knew I was going to need something. I was going to have to go back to work or find something. But I never liked working for somebody else. I don't like, I guess I don't know if it's the hours or the direction. The bosses are always horrible. I don't know. Mm-hmm. So I was looking for something else. And actually, my mom had been looking into getting a long arm. But what she was looking at is expensive, and it's not just a hobby machine for most people.
Right.
They're in the tens of thousands of dollars. So yeah. Unless you're just sitting on a whole pile of cash, generally people aren't just buying them to play with.
Yeah.
So she had done a whole bunch of research and had thought about getting a long arm. And then it kind of, over time, I thought, I think that's something that I could do. I'm looking for work. I don't want to work for someone else. And this is something I can do from home. During the school day, in my own hours, I can still go out for breakfast with friends or have coffee dates or go on school trips. So that was the kind of thing I was looking for.
Yeah. It's just a flexibility.
Yeah. I've had jobs where, like in college, where it was like a favor if my boss gave me the day off. And I'm like, that's not what I want.
Yeah.
I need to be able to be there for my kids.
Yeah.
Or just if I'm not having a great day or I'm feeling sick or whatever, and I can just work around whatever is happening, which right. also makes things harder too. But maybe we'll get there.
Some people just have more confidence than others. She said while we were talking about another small business owner promoting their product. Karen and I often talk about confidence, and we notice when other people have it or lack it. But what I say to her is the same thing I'll say here. People aren't born with confidence. Confidence is created. That's why I'm so passionate about working with people to create confidence in their lives. One of my coaching clients recently said the work we've done together has given him more confidence than ever to make the changes he needed to. To help create confidence in your life, I would love to begin coaching with you. And I know that money is the biggest hurdle to get past, so I'm giving 20% off my coaching packages to my podcast listeners. Just go to alexstreet.ca/coaching to connect, or DM me on Instagram @streetsays and say, by 2020, I want more confidence. And we'll get started with 20% off a coaching package. Connect with me saying, by 2020, I want more confidence, and we'll get this thing started. Now let's get back to the conversation. Yeah, I'm excited to dig a bit more into that and hear your perspective on, on entrepreneuring. Mm. That's definitely a word that I coined. I don't know about Javi, but I, what it's like to be entrepreneurs and parents, because we're both doing this, and it creates this beautiful flexibility, but then also, wait a second, there's no set hours, there's no boundary to our time, there's nobody telling us to work. And money is a good thing to kind of put food on our table. So how do we make that happen and everything? And so as you then jump into that and you have this conversation with your mom, or you're talking through it and you're like, oh, maybe I could do that. How do you then make that investment and go, yeah, let's do that. And here's what a business plan is going to look like. How did that lay out?
We had worked out basically... After Piper went back to school, I knew I didn't want to jump into something right away. Where did I? I can't even think of the timeline. I had started thinking about long-arm quilting. And I knew that it was a big investment. And I took about a year of actually mulling it over. Because I'm someone who can get excited about something and, like the other crafts... Mm-hmm. Buy all the materials for it and then go, So I didn't want to do that with a long arm. So it took about a year before I actually pulled the trigger. I went over numbers with my dad. He's a numbers guy. So we worked out how many quilts a year would it, like average size quilts, if there is such a thing, would it take to make the business go, to pay off the machine, to how many would I have to make to make 10,000 a year, 20,000, 30, like just numbers, break even point. I continued to think about it. And then I went to the Creative Festival, or it used to be this Creative Sewing and Needlework Festival in Toronto or Mississauga. I don't know where it was that year. Anyways. And I remember as we went out the door, I don't remember if it was you or my dad. I think it was my dad who said, I was going with my mom, and my dad said, you're not going to buy a long arm today, right? Kind of jokingly. And I was like, nope. And I don't know if my mom heard. So then we got there, and my mom had done research about the best long arms and pros and cons of different things. And she had looked into it a lot. I hadn't done that part quite so much. But the dealer who my mom was really, really sold on, and had the sort of best machine as far as she was concerned, was at the show, and they had a deal on long arms.
Of course they did.
Do I say numbers or no?
We're good. I just remember, I don't, it wasn't me who said that when you went out the door, because I remember you calling me from the festival and be like, hey, we found this thing. And I was like, a long what? What is it? Like, I'm pretty sure.
Had I not talked to you about it before?
I don't think so.
Apparently, all my talking was in my head.
Yeah, I don't.
My thinking and my.
But I remember being on that end of the phone, because you're like, hey, we're thinking about this, and it's today only, basically.
Right. So they had a show special.
Yeah.
Where it was $5,000 off.
Great.
And I'll let, $5,000 off this very expensive machine. And my mom's like, we have to do it now. And I was like, that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
So we called you.
Yeah.
We called my dad.
So you're at this, this is what I love about the story. Like, you're at this point of like decision. It's like the call to action. This is the hero's story of like, are you going to do it or not? And you have this like little moment. And then, so yeah, you call me, call your dad.
I feel like I'm going to break out in a cold sweat. It was like a stressful, stressful and exciting day. And yeah, so we called and said, listen, we want to make this investment. And, so my mom had originally wanted to buy the machine, but she would mostly use it for hobby. And so we I took a loan out through my dad.
Mm-hmm.
And he was not as excited about loaning someone money for a hobby, but he was more okay with loaning me money for a business because then he knew he'd get the money back.
Yeah.
So we had already gone over the numbers with my dad, and he sort of knew everything. He was a little surprised, having hours earlier said not to buy a machine, that we were calling to buy a machine. And I must say, you were very trusting with making that kind of investment.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
I was, I remember, again, I can almost like feel the feelings where it was like, okay. I remember saying to you, look, if I honestly don't really know, I can't picture this. I can't picture what it's going to be. I can't picture a business in this. I need you to tell me that there's a business in this. And I need you to tell me that you believe that it will work as a business. And if you do, then go for it. Right?
Yeah.
Something like that. And yep. You did. And so you did.
Yeah, because I had looked at the numbers and I knew that as far as quilting goes, this is one of the areas of quilting that could actually be a moneymaker.
Right.
Making money or making quilts on commission for people is not a moneymaker. People don't want to pay what quilts are worth, generally speaking. A non-quilter doesn't understand how much work goes into a quilt and isn't willing to pay a real hourly rate for a quilter.
Tell me, it's like how, best guess, your to like material for a quilt would cost.
Oh, it depends on the size of the quilt, but it could be
a big kind of queen size quilt.
A queen size quilt could be 100, 150
for material.
Well, that could be a quilt top, depending on how heavily pieced it is.
Okay, and then
batting would be 30 to 50, backing could be the same, 50.
And then hours.
Hours could, depending on how intricate it is, it could be 24 to like 100, depending on how complicated the quilt is.
Yeah.
So people just don't understand how much goes into them, how much the materials cost, how many hours go into them. So, and that's why I don't do commission quilts, because and then there's also people who don't know quilting, don't know the terminology or how to communicate what they want necessarily, which could be really frustrating. So I just deal with quilters, and they know how much they've put into their quilts, how much time and money they put into making the quilt top, and how much they've spent on batting and backing. So they come to me and they will pay me to quilt it. And when I talk to other people, non-quilters about it, they don't understand. Wait. So people are paying you to do that?
Yeah.
And yeah, they really are.
Yeah.
And sometimes the people are donating their quilts. Sometimes they're not even giving them as gifts or keeping them. When I talk to friends, they assume that my customers are selling their quilts, and that's why they would pay to have someone else do the quilting. But no, usually they're gifts.
This is what I've fallen in love with the quilting community, because it's like if there's a value system, the number one value is generosity. Like you're just so, as a community, the amount of quilts that you have made that, I mean, we have a lot of quilts sitting in our house, absolutely, that are used all the time, and the kids bring them out and play with them and throw them in the backyard, whatever it is, they sleep under them. We all sleep under a quilt. It's beautiful. But the amount of quilts that you've made and given away, and again, to come back to the time and the money that goes into making that thing and to give it away, I just think it's so amazing how generous you are. But it's a community thing.
Yep.
It's amazing. And so what I love about your business is that it is such a niche market.
Yeah.
As you say, you go to quilters because they know it. You go to quilters who specifically have made a quilt and need it finished. Yeah.
And some people have me quilt their quilts for all sorts of reasons.
Yeah.
Some people just don't enjoy that step and they never want to quilt their own quilts. They just like the piecing.
Yeah.
Some people, especially because I'm dealing with generally middle-aged women or older, seniors even, and they can't physically maneuver the quilt. It's too heavy and cumbersome for them to actually do the quilting on their own domestic machine. So they can't. Often I'm getting bigger quilts that someone can't do on their on their domestic machine. But sometimes they need a quick turnaround. Sometimes they want a specific pattern. So there's all sorts of reasons that someone would have me quilt it instead of them too.
What difference do you see in that person, or like from dropping off their quilt to when they pick it up? Like, what's the reaction like, and or what's the difference that, what difference do you see even in the quilt itself from drop off to like when it's finished?
I don't know that I see, I mean, I see happy customers generally speaking when they pick up their quilt, because like, just like I hated the quilting step when I, before I got the long arm, some other people do too. So they're just so happy and relieved to see it done. Like, they just have to trim it, trim the edges off and put the binding on, and they have a finished quilt instead of agonizing over what to do, or is the tension on their machine going to be right? Or they basically, are they going to ruin it? That was always my fear. So it's a lot of relief and excitement to have it done, because depending on, so a UFO is an unfinished object in quilting terms. So if something's been a UFO for them for years and they've had this unfinished quilt and finally, like, it's so close to being done, they just need to bind it and they're finished.
Yeah.
It's, that makes me feel satisfied, glad, because I understand that frustration with not having something finished and just wanting it finished.
Yeah.
From the quilt, from drop off to pick up, I find that quilting really brings a quilt to life. Quilt tops are so flat. Like, it can be beautifully pieced, beautiful fabric, but there's something about quilting that brings it to life.
Yeah.
And there's a saying, and I don't know if my mom made it up or not, but she says a quilt isn't a quilt until it's quilted. Which makes sense, but it's a quilt top before. It's not a it's not a quilt. Even if someone's piecing and they're going on a quilting retreat, which is a thing, and they're quilting, air quotes, it's not actually a quilt until you've sewn all the layers together and it's quilted.
Yeah.
So I like to bring it to life like that.
Yeah, you bring and then you bring the quilt to life. I mean, compare it to any other craft, and it's, you know, does an artist feel the same about their canvas? Like, at some point, did it come to life? Or a song, at some point, it just sort of came to life. It's like, yeah, you're working on it, but then it just, but at for what you're saying, I love it, because it's like, it comes to life and then it's done. Like, and then here you go, now go wherever you're going. This quilt will go now and be in a home somewhere.
Yeah.
Alive.
And used. And I love the idea that it's going to be used to bring someone comfort and warmth. And I love knowing that the quilts are being given as gifts. I mean, there are the sad stories where I know that a quilt is going to someone who has cancer or is going through chemo, something like that. And, but I like knowing that I'm playing a small part in bringing that person comfort.
Yeah.
Even though it's not a quilt for me, it's not, I didn't make the quilt. My name won't be on it anywhere, but just knowing that I'm doing a little bit to help is kind of nice.
Yeah. I think as an Enneagram 9,
this
is, I remember we read that and it said one of the descriptors of you is that you are what?
A warm, comfy blanket or something like that.
We're like, that's the one. We were a little confused. Were you 6 or a 9? And then warm, comfy blanket. We're like,
yeah, but we should change it to warm, comfy quilt.
Absolutely. Because, ew, blanket. Gross. I love it. And again, that's kind of the magic of it is, and really what I love about this show or this project of talking to people about discovering and doing what they're made for. Like, you have this hobby, this craft that you're just sort of brought into, and like any other thing, you sort of just work on it and develop it. But then it becomes this thing at some point to the, oh, I'm going to actually flip this and make some money off of it and support my family and get a job that is super flexible and do what I want to do. And also then what's important is not just to do the thing to get a paycheck, but you find this wonderful meaning to it that is, I mean, bringing life to it or helping other people or having a small part in mm-hmm. that, like you just said. I think it's that that's how you kind of know that at mm-hmm. this point, does it feel like you're doing what you're made for?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is, I sometimes kind of feel like I have to pinch myself because, like, I get to walk upstairs and go to work and play with fabric that I didn't have to pay for, that I'm getting paid to play with.
Yeah.
Which is awesome.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Living the dream, baby. And then, I mean, yeah, and you walk our kids to school.
Mm-hmm.
Or well, I do.
One way or the other.
Yeah, we have this system right now where sort of like one of us, we usually are out the door at 8 a.m. walking our three kids to school. And so one of us walks there and the other one gets to work. And then one of us will pick them up at 3 while the other one continues to work, basically 8 to 4, something like that. I mean, our schedules are all over the place. Mine throw in an audition or a meeting or a retreat or speaking something in there and it messes up all that system, but
yep,
it's fun working this together in the house.
Yeah, we're in a pretty good groove, I'd say.
I'd say so too. Yeah, thanks for thanks for doing what you do in this. So, what are the big dreams then for this going forward? Business or just goals?
I don't know that I have big dreams.
Yeah.
I just want to. I would like to make sure that what I'm doing is sustainable for our family, that I'm putting in, I don't know if it's enough hours, but that I'm working the hours that work for our family.
Yeah.
It's that whole cliche of finding balance. Working not too many hours, but still enough hours, making sure that I'm getting a good amount of money for the hours I'm putting in. Yeah. I don't want to be thinking about it constantly. I'd like to not have to work weekends, which I mostly don't unless there's someone who needs a rush quilt or something. I think that as the business grows, I need to figure out a new sort of groove. And it's May now. And since September, I've been steadily busy. And it's been really great and sometimes really stressful.
Yeah.
So figuring out how to make it sustainable so I'm not stressed out all the time.
Yeah.
And not thinking about it all the time. And yeah, so that's the sort of the main goal.
Yeah.
Just sustainability. I don't want to get burnt out and I can't because I've got this gigantic machine.
Yeah. Exactly.
Ideally I would like to be able to find some sort of passive income in it. There are people who create the quilting designs, and I've thought about doing that, but I would have to learn a whole new hobby to a technique. I think that would skill. Be on like yeah a whole new skill, because I would need to. I'm not a computer whiz means, and either Photoshop or I don't know, some computer program to, and I don't draw. I feel like I should be able to draw to draw out the patterns, but something like that where I can put the pattern online and have people, other Longham quilters buy it.
Yeah. And so you've got, again, this, I love the story of it. I love, obviously I'm part of it. It's great. And it's amazing to see you grow and flourish in this and do what you're made for. There's nothing that makes me happier than seeing you in that and thriving in it. And we have this thing where at the end of every quilt, once the machine sort of does its last stitch and it does this little ding, and then you start clapping, and whoever's in the house at the moment, whether it's full of kids or whatever, everybody that hears the clapping starts clapping.
Yeah.
And it's this amazing sort of finishing moment. And I mean, for you, for the person who your favorite parts of quilting are the beginning and the end, is that it feels like that's sort of this one's done.
Yep.
And so I guess My last question as we wrap this up now would be, do you have anything else that you would want to say to somebody else on a journey? Maybe they're a mom and they're looking for, how do I turn what I love to do into something that I can do during the day and make some money off this or anything? I don't know about practically or what, but just what would you say to encourage somebody that's discovering and doing what they're made for?
Well, I guess if someone's already found the thing and they're starting it, I don't know how to go about finding the thing you're made for. That's what you do.
Yeah.
I don't do that. So once they've found it and they are sort of taking the plunge, is to basically just stick with it. Because I've had the machine for for 3 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And really the first year and a half of taking customer quilts was kind of spotty. I was happy with what I was getting, and I think if I had been busy like I've been this past, whatever it's been, 10 months, right from the beginning, I would have been so stressed out. I wouldn't have been able to handle it.
Yeah.
So it's grown at a really good rate. And I would say just to keep plugging away, just keep working at it, because especially if it's the right thing and if there's a market there, it'll grow. And I think it'll grow at, mine grew at, I think, a healthy pace.
Yeah.
Where I was able to adjust to the demands of the job, and actually having constant, consistent work was nice. But going from having free time with all the kids in school, and basically doing whatever I wanted for, I think I had a year off before I got the machine, to then working, I definitely needed an adjustment period.
Yeah.
And to figure out what my calendar and schedule and wants and goals and everything were.
Yeah. Stick with it.
Yeah.
Let it grow.
Yeah. Kind of
at its own pace or at whatever pace you want it to.
And it depends what your goals are, but I wanted something a little bit more relaxed and from home. And so I think it's grown at a good pace for me, but I mean, work towards your own goals, but don't give up.
Yeah. Well, you know this, that's something that I need to hear as well. And I'm really thankful for that because you are my favorite encourager. You kick me in the butt when I need it. And you remind me that, no, this is the thing that you're working on. Do this thing. And I'm just sitting here. I'm thankful because, hearing that's your attitude through this is, no, you just stick with it. You found the thing. Now stick with it and go for it. So I'm thankful that you're sticking with this. I'm thankful for what you've been doing, and I am so, so glad to be your husband and be along for the ride with you. I think it's a lot of fun. That's it. That's all we got for today. Thanks so much for opening up your story and helping us understand the wide world of quilting a little more. You alluded to quilting retreats there for a minute, and this is part of my favorite thing, one of my favorite things about the quilting world, because I know that you ladies go on these retreats, and they're crazy weekends.
Some of my favorite weekends of the whole year.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You go away and you just literally sew.
Yeah, all weekend.
Cut and sew.
And it's never enough time. People are like, don't you get bored? No. I want to come home and keep sewing. And then I feel bad because I want to be in the sewing room.
Yeah.
And I'm like, when are the kids going to go to bed? I want to sew.
And I'm like, I was just with them for 3 days. Can you just give me a minute?
Yeah.
It's great. All right. Well, thank you so much for doing this.
Yeah. You're welcome. Bye. Bye.
As you now know, Karen is an incredible woman. She is as creative as anyone I know, and she is building this thing she has been dreaming about right in front of my eyes. It's wildly exciting, and I'm thrilled that I get to be along for the ride with her. So what's that thing for you, that old passion that you think could never become something? What opportunity is right in front of you, screaming out for you to move towards it? Karen and I are in a great spot right now. We both are taking care of our own businesses, both trying to tweak and change them as we go so they can reach more people, and we get to do this together. I can't think of anything more valuable than having someone with me who truly cares about my ideas succeeding. For some of us, I know that person is sitting right across the couch from you, they're your spouse or your boyfriend or your girlfriend. For some of you, it's your parents. For others, it's a close friend that's always there to listen and to encourage you. But what pains me, and the reason that I'm so passionate about coaching, the reason that this podcast started, the reason I do what I do, is because there are so many people out there that have nobody cheering them on like this. You don't feel like there's anyone that is fully on your side, listening actively and able to spur you on to the right next step. I love having my wife and my friends help me in certain ways, but I also knew that it was time to get more focused help. That's why I joined a mastermind and get coaching through that. I knew I couldn't wait any longer. I had to get serious. I had to take a step forward, and to get what I needed, I knew it was going to cost me money. My friends, my encouragement today is don't let money dictate what you can and can't do moving forward. There are all kinds of ways in our world around this hurdle. And on this journey of discovering and doing what you are made for, finding the right people to come alongside is one of the most important things you can do. So do whatever you need to do to get somebody to be fully on your side today. Hire a coach. Invest in a friendship. Do what you need to do to get somebody with you on this journey today. That's all we got for you today. Make sure that you go subscribe, rate, and review, and please share this on your social media accounts. This might just be the conversation someone you know needs to hear to change their life. Until next time, this has been Alex. Now go discover and do what you're made for.